And then this morning they said, oh, and by the way, we changed the location of the room. It's now for 2,000 women. So thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you for wanting to be a part of this. And I'm sorry, I know some of you like came up to me and said, do I get like extra points for the 1,000 calories I had to burn from going from the old room to this one? Yes. Yes, you do. Okay. So the last 6 weeks have been totally crazy since my book came out. Many of you have come to talk to me about it, and I'm so appreciative that you've read it and you've got all your little nuggets. And so we put together a really fun video to kind of capture the essence of all that has happened in the last 6 weeks. And I think that's the first thing that I just want to start off showing you, because I never, ever, ever thought I would talk about any of this. In fact, like, weight loss was my private demon. This was never going to be something that I was going to share. And it was one day on GMA, Sam Champion sort of said very spontaneously, totally unplanned, he said, do I see a slimmer Tori Johnson? And I said, Sam, oh my gosh, don't talk about that. And I was praying that we would go to a commercial break, but Sam kept going and going, and there was no commercial in sight. And when the show ended that day, so many viewers had posted on Facebook, Twitter, sort of asking, like, Sam's right, how'd you do it? And so for a little while I ignored everybody, hoping it would go away, and it didn't. And I realized that I had a chance to share a lot of my struggles, a lifelong struggle, and sort of how I finally figured it out with other people who've gone through some of the same struggles. And so this short video captures a whole bunch of that. So take a look at this first.
We've all noticed how our own Tori Johnson has slimmed down over the past year. She's written a book about that journey. It's called The Shift. It's a candid, very revealing look into how she struggled with her weight and what made her decide to make the shift. She's our deals and steals guru.
You love it, right?
And the mom of twins. She started two multi-million dollar businesses, but she's probably best known for empowering women to take charge of their working life.
It's work. It's definitely work.
But her own life was out of control.
Food has always been my entire life a source of comfort, in good times and bad. Being fat when you don't want to be fat it's like being in shackles. It's like being in a prison that you can't escape.
But her aha moment came in the form of a graceful yet candid conversation with someone very important to her.
In December 2011, one of my bosses told me that my clothes didn't do me any justice and she was going to send me to a stylist. I knew in that moment that it was not about my clothing. And what I interpreted, what I took away was lose weight or lose your job.
It clicked for me. The light bulb went off and I said, I'm gonna do it. I'm a smart girl. I'm gonna make it happen. Let's go.
So it was just before Christmas, and hey, January 1st, daily accountability. Going on the scale every single day. For some people, that would drive them insane. For me, if it was up, it was, oh my God, I gotta work harder. If it was down, it's like, great, great, keep going. No cheat days. And for a lot of people, that's like ridiculous. And I had this kind of aha moment at the beginning of my journey where I realized there's something totally wrong with this. You can't eat healthy and reward yourself with the stuff that got you in this bad place to begin with. It's akin to an alcoholic celebrating a month of sobriety with a few beers. It doesn't work. A lot of the mental stuff that really enabled me to be successful.
Tori, please come on out. You look absolutely marvelous.
Thank you.
Let me spin you around. Now, this is really,
oh,
watch you all the time, but you're just fantastic.
You know, it's been an amazing transformation.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
Johnson lost more than 7 pounds. We all saw it unfold right here on Eyewitness News First Report. The before and after pictures are remarkable, and her story is just inspiring.
I was laughing out loud.
Yes.
It is so honest, painfully honest. I began to appreciate it in a whole different way. Aww. Congratulations.
Here's what's the most fascinating to me. So that's 20 months.
I know.
That is almost 3.5 pounds a month. And if you had said to me at the beginning, Tori, listen, you're going to go on this thing and you're only going to lose less than a pound a week, I would have said, forget it. I'm not going to do that, because I've always, my whole life, been after the quick fix, like the quick gimmick. And what I learned in this process is that there is no pill, potion, or plan that can replace patience and perseverance. And that's what the book is all about. I reveal all the challenges and triumphs. I'm traveling around the country to host events to really help other people to escape the pain that's really sort of shackled me for 40 years. So I want to use our time together to share with you exactly how I was freed and how I was able to make a very big shift. Trying is not a strategy.
Hope is not a strategy. When things don't go right, turn the mirror on yourself. Figure out what you have done wrong. What can we do differently to make things go our way?
There are countless other people who have this hidden shame and this suffering that doesn't have to happen. The past and the present didn't have to control or define my future.
I want you to say, I make it happen. Here we go. One, two, three.
She is number one best-selling author. Tori is slamming it. You are selling those books off the shelf.
So we got to replace you guys in that video now, right? From what we took out, what we did out there. So I want to really quickly, so that's sort of like what has happened recently, but I want to go back just quickly and tell you two sort of different things. One is, how did I kind of get in this mess in the first place, which I think a lot of people will understand, and then how I got out of the mess, finally, once and forever. So it all started McDonald's, right? Of course. So my very, very first memories of food were, as a seven-year-old, my mom called me into the living room to tell me that she was pregnant with my brother, and it was the happiest ever. A baby was going to be in the house. Yay, yay, yay. And to celebrate this wonderful occasion, she and I went to McDonald's for dinner and had a Happy Meal and a Coke, full sugar Coke. And until I went to college, that's what I drank, Coke, full sugared Coke. And if it wasn't Coke, it was other forms of liquid sugar, like apple juice and orange juice and pineapple juice, and sort of no regard in our house for calories and expanding waistlines, Coke and expanding waistlines. Food was a source of comfort in good times and bad. Something great, let's celebrate, you know, with a pepperoni pizza. Something bad, nothing that a box or two of Entenmann's cookies couldn't fix. And so food was it. And so I remember that McDonald's moment and the kind of the path that it set me on. And the other sort of big searing moment from childhood came in my dentist's office, where I was a young girl, and we were at the pediatric orthodontist's office. And the way that it was set up is the patient's here, and the doctor's on one side, and the mom sits on the other. And to sort of make kind of fun chit-chat, the dentist turned to my mom, and he said, "So, Mom, gaining or expecting?" And she said, "My son is now 3. So that moment, she and I never ever talked about it. In fact, I think we went to Carvel for soft serve ice cream cone after, because my braces had just been tightened. And we never ever talked about that moment, but it has so been seared in my mind. Every time I'm in a dressing room and I try something on, I'm like, okay, look like I'm gaining or expecting. If I'm standing in front of the mirror in the morning to get ready, you know, gaining or expecting. Like, it's a constant theme that had been in my mind. And so, you know, like many, 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 many people, I had tried and failed as an adult at a million different diets under the sun. Like, you name the diet, there's a very good chance that I tried it and I failed at it. So I don't say, like, it didn't work, because I know, like, it didn't work. I think, you know, my most notable were, I was the most excited when we were going to do, my husband and I would, like, drag him into this process. Like, the poor guy, he'd say, sure, whatever you want, whatever support you need, and I'd say, like, do it with me. And so I think the first time I said that to him was the cookie diet. I was like, how amazing is this? We get to eat cookies all day. Like, and then we get to have, like, a sensible dinner. Like, how perfect does that sound? And he's like, all right, if you really want to do this. That lasted, like, 4 days. And there went the cookie diet. And then there was this David Kirsch diet. He's an incredible trainer in New York City, and he had a very, very sensible plan, sort of like an Atkins light. And my husband and him read David's book, and he said, like, this really makes sense. I can totally do this with you. If you want me to do this to help you, yes, 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 we'll do it. So we're moving along, and I'm losing weight, and he's losing weight, and everything's fabulous. And there were two nights in a row. We live in New York City in an apartment building, and we get home one night, and one of the doormen looks at my husband, and he's like, oh, like, Mr. Johnson, you look great. You look slim. You look fabulous. And, you know, I sort of gave him, like, a kind of grin. And the second night, there was a different doorman on duty, and same thing. This time, it was a little more formal. Peter, you're losing weight. You look fabulous, man. You look great. And I'm standing there thinking, like, hello, like, this is killing me. I'm losing weight. And nobody's saying a word to me, because I had so much more to lose. We got upstairs. I slammed the door. Peter's like, are you okay? I'm like, the diet's over. Like,
Like, if I have to hear one more fucking person say you look good, I'm gonna kill myself. Seriously. And so he said, like, okay, let's order Chinese food. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So, like, that's pretty much, like, my diet history. Like, as soon as, you know, I'd either get bored or jealous or something else, like, I'd sabotage it. I would give up. And so that went on for decades. I was the girl who could lose 5 pounds, lose 10 pounds, maybe even lose 15 pounds, but never enough to really, 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 and truly make a dent. All the time for Good Morning America, 6 years, I would say. I've been there now for over seven. For the first 6 years, I was stunned that nobody ever said a thing to me. I'm like, this place really must be the one place in television talent trumps appearance. Like, how about that? Like, nobody has said a word to me. And so I thought, like, all right, you know, that's pretty good. I'm you know, I'm going to be off the hook. I guess, you know, I don't need to worry about that. Even though I hated my body, I hated my size, I hated all of that, I thought, you know, there's no incentive to change. There's no real reason to change. I desperately want to change, but I can't figure out how to change. And all of that completely changed on December 20th, 2011, when one of my bosses, and it's always trouble when the big boss wants to see you, when one of my bosses said to me, we spent an hour together, and so the first 50 minutes were like nonsense chit-chat of nothing, and I thought, maybe I'm going to be off the hook here. She hasn't, like, brought up anything yet, and then I realized, like, her cell phone's not ringing, someone's not summoning her away for an emergency, like, I'm about to get it. And in the last 10 minutes of that time together, I did, sort of. She said to me, you don't look your best, your clothes don't do you any justice, I want to send you to a stylist. And I sort of nodded and said, okay, you know, sure, I'm happy to have the help. And I realized I wasn't making her job any easier, so she decided to take a different tact, and she said to me, you know, I feel really great when I exercise. And I looked at her and I said, good for you, good for you. And, like, I'm thinking in my mind, do I look like I exercise? Like, we are not going to talk about exercise. Like, I'll talk about my kids and my husband, but, like, we're not talking about this. And fortunately, the hour was up, and it was like we had our hugs goodbye, Merry Christmas, see ya. And I scurried out of that ABC News building as fast as I could, and I called my husband, and he was, like, anxious, of course, to know what had gone on. And he's like, headlines, what are the headlines? I said, the headline is lose weight or lose your job. And he was like, she said that? I was like, yeah. He's like, tell me exactly what she said. So I told him what I just told you. He's like, well, she didn't really say that. I was like, trust me, Peter, how naive are you? That's exactly what she meant, you know. She just had more class and more tact and more grace than to use those words. But this is it. I am not going to lose the job that I love more than anything. Like, I'm going to totally get my act together. I'm going to change. And I think he was, like, terrified because we were going on a road trip for Christmas. And he was like, mom on a diet on a vacation, like, not a good thing. And so I said, I promise this time's going to be different because it's not going to be a diet. A diet to me has always been a temporary pause on bad behavior. This is going to be a lifestyle change. This is going to be something so dramatically different. And at the time, I didn't know what it was. I sort of was, you know, day by day going to figure it out. But I realized that I had to look at all of my past failures, all of the past challenges, figure out sort of the pinpoint places of where things went wrong so that I could incorporate that going forward, so that I really could make a big mental shift, an ability to change my mind for a better life. And I want to quickly take you through those steps. So there's five steps. Step one, how fed up are you? I need to go beyond, because I'm very much the kind of person who, if I thought my job was on the line, but then I saw some tiramisu or baked potato or potato chips, I probably would have said to myself, you know what, let them fire me, I'll go get a job at the Today Show, I'll go find another job elsewhere, it'll be okay. I would have liked to justify that, I would have sort of challenged them, like, let's see if they really are serious. And I would have made up excuses, like I had always made up excuses. So I had to go deeper than that. Why am I so fed up? So I started thinking about really serious things. I had to admit to myself that I hadn't been to the doctor in more than 10 years because I simply didn't want to lecture about my weight. And that's how my last appointment at the doctor ended. And so instead of going back, I avoided going to the doctor. And I thought, like, if my kids knew that about me, that would be horrendous. Like, I got to do something about that. But I wouldn't go to the doctor till I lost the weight. So I'm like, okay, you got to lose the weight. I thought back to my wedding day. I was a 23-year-old bride, and I wore navy on my wedding day, a navy suit, because I knew I would look like a gigantic marshmallow in a white wedding dress. Like, not the cute little ones that go in your hot chocolate. Like, a horrible thing. And I'm like, not going to do it. So I, you know, wore something else. I thought about all the frustrating times standing in a dressing room. I thought about all of the invitations that I turned down because I would get an invitation and immediately think to myself, every single woman who goes to that's going to be wearing a strapless, gorgeous gown. Like, I don't do strapless. I don't even do dresses. Like, I'm not going. And all of these things sort of were coming together, and I'm like, I am totally fed up. Like, this is it, completely fed up. And I think anytime you want to make a big change like that, you've got to tap into that. It's not just about doing it for one person, one reason, but sort of really when you're trying to change a life of behavior, understanding why this time has to be different because I didn't want to repeat any of that anymore. Step two, what are you willing to give up? So this is not so much about, this was for me more about lifestyle issues, like saying, oh, you know, I travel, and so therefore, you know, it's really hard to eat. I used to sort of justify it saying, like, what happens on the road stays on the road. And I'm like, who are you kidding? Like, what happens on the road, like, goes right here, like, you know where. Like, it doesn't stay there, it stays right here. And so I realized, like, no more excuses about traveling. We get tons of food in our office every day, and sort of it shows up. We have to eat it. I mean, right? There's, like, starving people around the world, so we have to eat this. Sort of any excuse or no excuse at all. People pleasing, thinking, you know, you're going out with somebody and they say, like, you have to have a drink. Oh, come on, let's share a dessert. Oh, let's eat this. And I realized, like, no more people pleasing, no more making up any of these excuses about travel. Like, my mission had to stay with me regardless of geography. The goal was the same. And so I came up with sort of a list of all the things that I was willing to give up in terms of really sticking to my goal. And one of the things that became really important to me was this sort of concept of preference or priority. And so my preference, hands down, you name it, would be to have the cookies, have the chips, have the crap. Like, definitely that would be my preference, hands down. But my priority would be lose weight, get healthy. And so if I would just pause for a moment and sort of think about that, you know, preference, like, go to the movies with my husband, which we would do every single weekend. But I realized, like, oh my gosh, I absolutely cannot, like, sit in a movie theater and watch, listen, see other people, like, eating buttered popcorn. Like, I can't smell that, I can't be around that and not want that. So my priority, lose weight, I'm just not gonna go to the movies. My husband didn't like that one. He's like, why don't you just, like, bring some almonds? I'm like, what planet are you on? Like, buttered popcorn or almonds? Like, I don't see the connection there, but okay. And so I stopped going to the movies, and I realized, like, there were certain patterns, behaviors that I had to give up, that I was willing to give up, and I didn't say to myself, you know, I can't do that. I said, I don't do that anymore. And I think there's, like, a psychological difference. Like, when, as soon as you tell me I can't do something, like, I want to do it five more times, or I want five more of them. But when it's my choice that I just don't do that, it's so much easier to really stick with it. And so that was incredibly powerful for me. Step three, what's your plan? I think anytime you're going to do something, and I certainly know this from small business, from working with so many small business owners, from building my own small business, having a plan, but a simple plan, is really important. And my simple plan required no ambiguity, just total clarity, so that I could recite it, remember it, keep it sort of fresh, top, front, and center in my mind at any time. So very, very simple. Eat less, like, duh, right? Like, if you need to lose weight, you probably eat too much. That was, like, not a, didn't take a kind of a brain scientist for me to figure that one out. But I needed to do that. Choose smarter. So typically when you need to lose weight or you want to lose weight, it means choosing differently, choosing better foods than the ones that you're eating right now. For me, the thing that worked the best was cutting carbs, plain and simple. Like, I could look at a food and determine what's the carb count of that, either by looking at the nutritional label, looking it up on an app, just knowing that high-carb foods were not my friend, and cutting carbs had been historically the easiest and most successful way that I had lost weight in the past. And so that's pretty much my eating plan, like, cutting carbs. And the third point was move more. And this was probably the easiest one because I was moving not at all. So, like, take a walk around the block, like, victory, you followed your plan. Like, I mean, literally, like, no exercise. And so, you know, people used to say, like, oh, you really need, like, 45 minutes of cardio. I'm like, who are you talking to? Like, the girl's gonna go from 0 to 45 in a day? Like, that's not me. And it was months before I finally started to exercise. And it was actually Alex, who's here somewhere, who finally said to me, like, you really do need to get with this exercise thing. And so why don't you start with just 5 minutes? Like, go on your treadmill for 5 minutes. Like, don't tell me you don't have 5 minutes, that you can't handle 5 minutes. So I was like, all right, I'll do the 5 minutes. And, you know, 5 turned to 7 to 10, and now it's like 45 minutes a day that is just sort of part of my routine. And I just do it. And to even some days I'll say to myself, like, I can't believe you really just did that. Like, that's crazy. You really just because I was the girl who did nothing, nothing. Like, walked to my office, sat in my chair all day long, went home. So the move more part, really and truly, was the easiest and became sort of one of the most important things, I would say, over the course of time. In the video, I mentioned this very, very briefly, but it's the thing that sort of a lot of people have said, like, you're insane. This whole no cheat days concept. So I realized that on every diet I had been on in the past, you were told that you could follow the plan for 6 days, and if you were a good girl and you followed that plan, then on the seventh day, reward yourself with a cheat day, reward yourself with a cheat meal, eat whatever you want. And believe me, I took very big advantage of those cheat days by eating whatever I wanted. And so the next morning, typically a Monday morning, I was like, oh, you know what, I can't do this diet thing today. Like, just give me one more day, which turned into, you know, it's a bad week. I'm not really going to do this week, which that would turn into forget the whole month. And then it was, oh, you know what, the holidays are coming. It'd be August, and I'd be saying the holidays are coming. And it was just like one excuse sort of after another. And I realized that my problem was, like, I wasn't born with the moderation gene. Like, it doesn't work for me. So people who say you should be able to enjoy everything in moderation, I agree entirely. You should be able to. But if you can't, because you gain weight when you enjoy too much in moderation, you've got to rethink that. And so for me, rethinking it was like accepting that moderation doesn't work and finding alternatives to that and simply saying, cheat days aren't an option. I am not going to reward healthy eating with the foods that made me fat, because that truly is akin to an alcoholic celebrating a month of sobriety with a beer. Like, it doesn't work. It's such. And it was very powerful for me to recognize that and to embrace it. And I think it's been like one of the biggest keys to success for me. Step four, what's your daily accountability? So, you know, these are simple things, like going on the scale every single day, not to live or die by it, but to just be aware of where you are. So 3 weeks doesn't go by and you're like, oh my gosh, where'd those 10 pounds come from? Because you're always aware. And it really does keep you focused and on track. I wear a Jawbone or a Nike Fuel Band. I sort of switch around to remind myself every day to make sure that I'm getting enough steps, that I'm just moving as much as necessary. I think photographs are a really powerful form of daily accountability. I used to tear up, delete every old photograph. Fortunately or unfortunately for me, Google Images has a whole lot of old photographs of me that you're able to find, many of which you saw in the video. And to be able to compare those to now is an incredible form of motivation and accountability, to know that, yes, like, things can change and they have changed. So whatever the form of daily accountability, like, you find your protocol and you stick to that protocol and you don't give up, because when you give up, you do so at your own peril. And I'll tell you a quick story about that. My daughter last summer decided, like, we really needed, like, family trips. I'd been traveling a lot. My kids were at sleepaway camp, and we decided, okay, we're gonna go. What do you guys want to do? And my kids decided they wanted different trips. And for the first time ever, our family split up. And my son and my husband went to the Cape for a week, and my daughter and I went for 3 days to Beverly Hills. And it was like, that was the equivalent, you know. She got her 3 days, he got a week. And she really planned. She said, can I plan like a fantasy trip, like an absolute fantasy trip? We haven't been together, we really need this bonding time. I was like, yes, yes, you have my permission, like, go wild. So she used up all of my American Airlines miles to upgrade us to business class to go to LA. She booked us a BMW from Avis. She booked us at the fanciest hotel. I mean, truly fantasy. She did a whole Kardashian-worthy itinerary. And so we get to LA, and one of the first places we go is Millions of Milkshakes. And we're driving there, and she's like, Mom, remember you told me this, like, whole fantasy thing? You're into this fantasy? I'm like, I'm into this fantasy. I'm not going to have a milkshake, but, you know, it's cool. Go do whatever you want. So we get into Millions of Milkshakes, and I don't know if you've ever, like, been there or seen these kind of places, but it's this, like, cute, like, hot pink bubblegum colored little place with blaring music and a really cute guy behind the counter who welcomes us like, hi, girls, like, what can I get you? And seriously, like a Coke addict, I'm like, we'll take, like, the Kit Kat, the Reese's peanut butter cups. I, like, start going down the line, naming, like, every single thing that was, like, in this bin. It was sort of, like, topping style. But instead of, like, toppings on ice cream, he's throwing it into, like, a blender, and he's going to, like, make us this shake. So he finishes the shake, and he says, yeah, like, of course. Like, I couldn't get it fast enough. And he hands us this milkshake, and we're standing there. Two two straws go into it, and like we sucked down that milkshake so fast. It was like we didn't even stop to think. It was so out of control. And at the end of it, like I froze. And Emma's like sort of like shaking me, like not knowing, like, is she seriously, like, is she about to faint? Like, is she scream, cry? Like, what is about to happen here? And she's like, Mom, let's go. Like, let's walk out of here. Like, we need some fresh air. So we walk out, and she's like, what is going on? What is wrong with you? And I'm speechless. Like, I can't believe that I had just done this. And she says, this promise me. Like, she's now turning from, like, concerned to angry at me. And she said, you promised me this whole fantasy thing. Why are you ruining it already? We've only been here an hour. Like, this is crazy. So I turned to her, and this is where my, like, potty mouth comes back. And I said to her, like, Emma, that wasn't a fantasy. It was a fuck-up. And it was, like, horrible. And so we get to the hotel, and the hotel has, I cringe thinking, I'm honestly, like, my, like, sweat thinking about it. We get to the there's a scale in our hotel room, and I'm like, you know what? That scale looks old and rickety. I'm not going to use that scale. I'm already, like, dismissing something that I had done every single day up until I had done this every day. I'm not going on that scale. I don't trust that scale. And so we got back home, and I had gained, like, you know, 8 pounds, something ridiculous, and I realized, like, when I avoid daily accountability, it's like at my own peril. Like, I can't do that anymore. And I allowed, you know, one bad meal to turn into like four bad meals into four bad days. You can't, it doesn't work. So daily accountability is essential. Step five, fifth and final step. How are you going to embrace patience and celebrate the victories? And I think this is probably the most powerful one, because you know, the victories don't always come on the scale. So for me, it was, you know, like what amounted to really just around a pound a week or so. And if you would have said to me, like, you're going to really give up every single food you love and you, like, are going to only lose a pound a week and it's going to take a really long time, I would have said, no way. Like, pick another girl, pick another plan. Like, this isn't going to work. Too impatient. It's not going to happen. And for whatever reason, I had made this mental shift where I said to myself, I'm not going to put down a number of pounds, nor am I going to have a deadline. It's going to take as long as it's going to take, and I know it's going to take a very, very, very long time. And one of my favorite people, Gretchen Rubin, she wrote this book called The Happiness Project, number one New York Times bestseller. She said to me, you know, we tend to overestimate what we can do in a short period of time. And I realized, oh my gosh, that was me all the time. I would say, I need to lose 20 pounds by the wedding. And oh, by the way, the wedding is Saturday. And of course I would fail. Of course I would fail. There's no way that I could ever, ever accomplish the unrealistic goals that I set for myself. And Gretchen says we totally underestimate what we can do over the long haul. And I think that was one of the most powerful lessons for me in all of this, because over the long haul, I accomplished a lot. And I think it's not just applicable to our health, but it's applicable to every area in our lives. And I want to expand those areas. And I want to be able to use the rest of our time to really talk about not only applying this sort of mental game to and sort of, you know, necessity, really. It's not just a game, but it's a necessity to changing your mind for making improvements and changes and evolving, not just in areas of health, but in other areas of your life too, because we have to think of the long haul. We have to think of the long haul. And I can't think of a better person who we begged to stay today after her time this morning to be able to share with us some of the other areas of really thinking about longevity and getting exactly what it is that you want out of your relationships and your career. So I know you loved her this morning, and you're going to love her a lot now too. So let's welcome back the amazing Sally Krawcheck. You know what? You got to use this. You got to use that mic. Okay. I know. We got a little mic situation. So people said to me, like, oh, this shift thing, like, you can talk about marriage and you can talk about other areas of your life. I'm like, I've been married for 19 years. I don't have any drama to talk about, but Sally could talk about it. Yeah, but Sally could talk. Do you want to pull that out of there? Can you? Yeah, so you don't have to lean.
I can pull that out of here.
Yeah.
No, you know, I've had several occurrences in my life where you look around and you say, maybe I'm not where I think about this a lot for us as women in business. And I think about it a lot because there are very few of us who will go into business and start at a company at the age of 22 and who will retire from that company at the age of 65 or 68. You know, we made it from trainee to, you know, CEO or whatever the role is. But instead, because our careers are so long and, in fact, are extending, you know, there are going to be times in our lives when we look around and say, what was right for me 2 years ago is not right for me today. What was right for me a decade ago is no longer interesting to me today. And I've been through several transitions. And one thing that wasn't right for me was my first husband. Now, let's chat, shall we? So, how do you know if you've got the wrong husband? Well, besides the fact that my ex-husband is now with my ex-friend, which should have been a clue, here was the sign, because I've had a really good husband and I've had a not-so-good husband. Here is the sign, right? You come home from work. You said, sweetheart, I'm going to be home at 6:30. You roll through the door at 7:30. Your boss caught you. You know, there was a problem at work. You roll through at 7:30. If the husband does this, watch. It's a big room. Let me do that again. You got it? You got it in the back there? Eyes up. Apparently, when psychiatrists watch couples interact, the only thing, if they can only know one thing about a couple and how they interact, is if one of them is an eye roller. It's a sign of contempt. They say it's a sign of barely disguised contempt. I don't think it's very well disguised. But the difference between that and the difference between, honey, I'm sorry you're late, you want a glass of wine, which of course seems to be a recurring theme with me, you know, is a night and day difference. And we all know, I sort of think about a career as being, you know, a pyramid, a hierarchy of needs. And if your children aren't okay, it's impossible to bring your full self to work. If your marriage is not okay, it's impossible to bring your full self to work. And so for me, while, you know, the decision to part ways with my husband was not fully mine, again, he's with my ex-friend, get it, it actually was so freeing and so liberating. But I've also been through periods of time when, you know, I just didn't like what I was doing. I spent, for any of you who are younger, I spent my entire 20s lost. I worked at, you know, Solomon Brothers in investment banking. I didn't like it. I transferred to London. I didn't like it. I went to business school to try to get out. I didn't particularly like it. I went into media. I didn't like it. I went back to investment banking. I didn't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm divorced, all that stuff. And I remember sitting about 1 month before I turned 30, which you remember when you're younger is like the end of time, right? Thinking, I'm a complete failure. I'm not working. I spent all this money on education. It's over. And what was very interesting is I was standing in my kitchen. I was actually eating a pear, eating healthy, eating a pear, and kaboom, like lightning from the sky, it hit me that I should be an equity research analyst. Which actually, I should have been an equity research analyst. I went out, I said, that's right, I like analysis, I like writing, I like interacting with people. You know, I've just been looking, I've been transitioning for 10 years and I didn't know it. And I finally gave myself the room, the space to figure out what was right for me, and then it was just a matter of finding the job, right? Well, now, you know, Lehman Brothers rejected me 3 times. Morgan Stanley gave me a job, took it back because I had a baby at home. Smith Barney rejected me because they didn't think I would work very hard. I later fired him when he worked for me. And I got the job at Sanford Bernstein. But that job, again, was right for me during my 30s, and into my 40s was not the right job. So it's a little bit about getting rid of that which doesn't help you, recognizing that which doesn't help you, and giving yourself the time and the space to figure out as we transition, as we will during the course of our careers, what's right for you now. And unfortunately, I wish I could tell you, for me it was as easy as making a list of the pros and cons. I made about 1 million of them. For me, it just had to show up when it showed up.
I think that's so true. I mean, I think that's the similarities are so obvious in terms of losing weight.
great, focusing on your health. Like, you could try and fail and sort of be miserable and dislike something, and yet until you have this moment of clarity where you say, aha, like, I can do this. It's not because something so different happened in the world. It's simply because you were ready. You were ready, and something in your body and your psyche was saying you were ready. And that's how, you know, the pair didn't make it happen. But in that moment, because of all of those prior experiences, you knew that was your time. You knew that was your time. So for somebody who is feeling like it's their time, but they don't know their time for what, right, but they know that I'm not happy with the way things are. And it doesn't mean that you're miserable in your entire life, but it means, or you, it could be, but there's something specific that you know you are really ready to change. What's your advice?
Well, if you really know it and you know what it is, do it, right? You know, go. There is no time like the present. When you know something, it's time. And I've always said with people, I've hired an enormous number of people. I've fired, unfortunately, people as well for performance. And you know what? When it was time and you knew you had to make a change, when it was time to let that person go, it never got any better. It never got any better. So if you know it, do it. However, if you don't know it, and that's where you spend most of your time not quite knowing, keep your options open. Keep yourself open. Keep your eyes open. Play it loose. Don't play it tight. Gather experiences. So for some of you in this room today, you know, I want to change my job, but I'm not quite sure what I want to change it to. I'm not going to tell you to go. What I will tell you is to try to raise your hand for that additional project at work that's a bit different than what you're doing today. Well, maybe at work you won't get that opportunity. You know, maybe someone else will get that opportunity. You know what I think the great thing to do is? Volunteer. Go to a nonprofit. If you're looking to build out your experience in marketing because you might want to shift into marketing, go to a nonprofit and say, I'm going to work on this project for you for free. I'm going to try marketing. Now, you might say, gee, you know, I'm giving away my time for free. That's a lot better than going after a job that's not the right job for you, right, and then having to change again. So give of your time. Test those things. You know, sort of take notes, sort of play with it, let your mind relax. I mean, it really is. You know, I did the hair and makeup thing this morning, which, you know, matters. You know, but one of the benefits I later realized of the hair and makeup every morning is that that's when I actually have my best ideas. It's when I'm sitting there, it's the mascara's going on, and boom, I've got it. So gather that information, gather the experience, and then eat the pear, put on the mascara, whatever it is, and one day you'll know it, and then go.
Okay, so we want to give you guys a chance to be able to ask your questions, and I know that there are mics, I see three of them, there's more than three, but in these center rows, and I think that if you have questions, you're supposed to go to those mics, and then we'll call on you. And if you don't have questions, the way it works here is that we call on you, so... So don't be shy. Go ahead.
Sure, I'll get started.
Good.
Thank you both. You're both fantastic. Tori, 2 years ago, I brought my now 26-year-old daughter to your small business boot camp, and it was fantastic. She got the message, I need to follow my dream. And working in marketing for her was not her dream. She's now a special effects makeup artist in Los Angeles, following her dream, making a living. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Congratulations to her.
Well, thank you. One of the questions I wanted to ask both of you is, because I also have another daughter who's just like you described, Sally. She's in her 20s, trying different things, trying to figure out what it is she wants to do. My daughter, I told you about, Tori, has a real weight issue. So as a mother, as an older woman coaching younger women, I mean, what is the advice that you have that we can use to coach the younger women or the daughters in our life to shift, whether it's a personal shift in weight, whether it's a career shift, exploring where in the world should I go?
So I'll specifically just address the weight thing, and then Sally will address the career part. I am so grateful for the way that my boss spoke to me. which was she came to me with a problem and a solution. I didn't particularly want to follow her solution ultimately, which was going to a stylist, because I realized on my own what she wanted me to realize, which is, you know, this mic sounds terrible, right? Which one is it? Like, I don't know if it's this or this, what's causing it. Sorry, you guys. I don't know what happened to our technician. Oh, there we go. Now let's see. Perfect. Thank you. Magic. So what I liked, though, was that she came to me with a problem and a solution. The problem was you don't look your best. So it wasn't you're fat, you need to lose weight. It was you don't look your best, which is a really nice way of saying you're fat. And I appreciated that. And I want to send you to a stylist. And so she offered a solution. And I think it immediately, like, took the edge off for me. Like, I didn't have to go on the defensive. I didn't know what the conversation was going to be about. But in that moment, I was okay with it. And in fact, even more significantly, since that conversation, I was really, really okay with it. In fact, I dedicate this book to her because I really feel that I wouldn't listen to anybody else, but somehow or other, I listened to her. And I really think it's because of the way that she spoke to me. And so rather than attacking somebody, rather than telling them they have a problem and they must change, being a willing participant, a caring participant in helping somebody to change, I think can be very valuable. I mean, ultimately, someone's not going to change unless they want to change, unless you have some leverage over them. And in this particular case, the leverage she had over me was my job. She never threatened my job. She never, I think the other benefit was that she didn't make any threats. It's what I sort of interpreted, what I took away was like, oh my God, you know, you need to do this. And so it was the best possible outcome for both of us. Like, she got to deliver her message and I heard it loud and clear, and you know, we're best friends because of it. So I think it's using just grace and understanding when talking to somebody.
And I would say that, look, we're all can be challenged with our children and trying to help them find the path. And only you know your child and what kind of help they are open to receiving. You know, for my children, what I find is helpful for them is that I listen to them and then I play back what I hear. So, and my son right now, he's in college, and should I major in this? Should I major in this? Do I want to be this? Do I want to be this? And the mistake that I've made and will not make again is, you should do that. I mean, I know exactly what he should do, by the way, right? Exactly. But it's not my choice. And so, you know, what he finds to be helpful is I listen, I play back, I hear you saying, I hear you don't like, up, 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 up. But what gets very hard for me is these discussions can evolve into complaining sessions sometimes. And, you know, what I need to always find my way is where the tough love comes in, right? Buddy, get over it. You know, gratitude. We're so fortunate to have this. Don't complain about this. Look at this opportunity. And we all have to find that right mix for our kids. But just remember, I keep reminding myself, those frontal lobes are still developing through their 20s. Right? The decision making, the critical thinking. And so there really has to be a journey there before they get to what it is.
Great.
Go ahead. Oh, me? Oh.
You, yeah, Reggie.
Hi. Sally, I missed your presentation this morning, so I apologize if you addressed this already. But I work in the media, and I've been doing a number of interviews with women CEOs. And it seems as if a common theme in talking about why we don't break sort of the glass ceiling is that we as women don't do a good job of mentoring other women. And if you talked about this already, I'll take the question away. But I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
Well, look, we're all the product of our experiences. And so my experience is in financial services. And I was never mentored, or I talked this morning about being sponsored by other women, because there were no other senior women. And so there was actually a point in my career when I was 26 years old working in investment banking in London, and I was the senior woman there. And so, you know, they're getting to be more, and we need to, those of us in the room who are senior women, yeah, I really do think we should take it on ourselves to give that extra hand, that extra advice, that extra guidance to the younger women. I think we should. I don't think we burn in hell if we don't, but I think we should. And one reason we should is because the guys are much less likely to give women feedback. The leadership loop Leadership is a learned thing. We don't come out of the womb as leaders. We learn it through hundreds and thousands of micro lessons. And for women, because men are less likely to give that feedback, that loop can be broken. Why are men less likely to give us feedback? Well, the research shows it's because they're scared we'll cry. Okay. Here's my advice to young women. Here's my advice to everybody. And ask for feedback all the time. Don't wait till the year-end review. Don't make it a big deal. But it should be as simple as, Tori, how did I do on that panel? How could I have done a better job? You know, this morning, you know, how could I have made my point more strongly? Very matter of fact, very, you know, transactional, very often. And what will happen over time, assuming you don't cry and assuming you take it well, is that those guys will get more comfortable giving that feedback because they know you want it and can take it. And some of those guys and some of those women will turn into mentors, and some of those guys and some of those women will turn into sponsors. But we have to do the work in order to try to transition those people into advocates for us overall.
I think the way that you posed that advice was really important. It's basically giving someone permission to be candid with you. So a lot of times we ask for feedback like, was I good? And it's sort of like, uh-oh, you're trapping someone with like a yes or no answer, and they're going to take the easy row out, right? They're going to tell you, yeah, you were fine type thing. And so I think using your specific example of truly wanting candid feedback and giving someone permission to be candid because you can take it is the way that you get the candid feedback.
That's exactly right.
Hi. How are you? I just wanted to thank both of you. I have totally enjoyed listening to both of you. You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
I look forward to reading your book, Tori, but my question is more to you. I think your determination is fantastic, but what support did you have that kept you focused? I mean, in my job, I barely get a chance to eat, or I don't make it a priority. So, like, I'm just eating whatever I want to. So, in a nutshell, if you could.
Sure. I mean, you know, I've always had a good support system. So, there was nothing new. So, I have an amazing husband and two great kids who've always, you know, sort of supported whatever I've wanted. But even with their support, I would fail simply because I wasn't ready to do it. And so, I really, really believe that regardless of sort of who you're surrounded by, something as personal as losing weight absolutely has to be connected to your willingness to do it and your willingness to say no to other people, your willingness to say, you know what, my kids only eat pasta, but pasta's not right for me, so I'm going to cook something different, or, you know, my spouse doesn't like this, or my partner doesn't like this, but I'm going to do this for me. I think it's one of those things where it's so easy to kind of fall in the crutch of following what other people want. And this is one of those, you know, I have an office where, you know, by 11 a.m., everyone's talking about, like, what should we order lunch today? Like, chicken fingers or grilled cheese? And I was, like, always part of that discussion. And I realized, like, no, like, I can't be part of that discussion anymore. But that doesn't mean other people have to change because I need to change. Right. So I sort of stopped relying on looking for everybody to support me and realized that it had to come from me this time.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Okay, one more.
Yeah, Sally, your last comment about volunteering, I was reminded of Susie Orman, who has this vision that volunteering, we shouldn't be giving away our time, particularly as women. So it would be interesting to have her to. Our time freely.
Yep. Well, look, so what I think I'm talking about, and by the way, I love Susie Orman, but what I think I'm talking about is something different, right? Which is, if you're volunteering your time to get a new skill, you are getting something in return. You know, it's not fair, it's not right. All of you, you know, as we get to know each other better, or as we've gotten to know each other this morning, I'm a research analyst. I call myself a recovering research analyst. And that means sometimes I bring up research that's uncomfortable for us to hear. But the truth is, the research shows that men are given business opportunities and new opportunities more often because of their potential. And we women are given new opportunities more often because of our experience. And then we get ourselves into a catch-22. And I saw this at the very large companies I worked at, where you had the same women on the same slates all the time. And it was always the same reason they didn't get the job, which is they didn't have marketing experience. And I would then say, well, neither does he. And they'd say, yeah, but I know he can do it. Well, why do you know he can do it? And the answer was never because he's a guy and we, you know, we're in the manly man club. The answer was typically, essentially something like, he reminds me of myself and I know I could do it, so therefore he can do it. That was sort of the answer. So look, we should change all that. CEOs and boards and leaders should be very aware of that, and they should change all that, and we should be very vocal about that. And that's what we should do as a group. But for an individual, we can sit there and we can wait for it to change, we can make our noise, or we can empower ourselves and recognize a lot of things need to change, but for the time being, I'm going to gain, if I want that promotion, I'm going to make sure there's not a reason in the world they're going to say no. And so for me, that volunteering my time, I'm getting something in return for that.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Thank you.
Yeah, strategic volunteering. Absolutely. Okay, so we're getting our time cues that we're out of time, but here's what I would encourage you to do. I would encourage you to follow Sally on Twitter, at Sally Krawcheck, right? At Sally Krawcheck. Ask her questions. Ask her questions today, tomorrow, Sunday, in 2 months from now, whenever you want, whenever you think of something that Sally can help you with. Ask her on Twitter. She's very active on Twitter, and I'm volunteering your time now that you'll answer them. and I'm happy to answer your questions, too. And, in fact, I'll be happy to see you throughout the exhibit hall at the Hail Mary, because I hope you come. If you didn't eat the Hail Mary this morning, come and see me and chat with me, and let's eat macaroons together at the Hail Mary booth. But thank you. Thank you, guys. And hold on. I'm not saying goodbye.